This is a production of Cornell University.
Afternoon, everyone. I'm knocking for you. Garrett, you know, chatting over here.
I'm providing counsel.
Okay. Wednesday, April 20th, meeting of the Employee Assembly. It is 12:18. Any late additions to the agenda for today? Okay, then moving right along to business of the day. I think you saw on the agenda that our next meeting is going to be in Geneva. And the executive group met last week, and we kind of put together a tentative schedule for the day. And we're hopeful this, I know, Leslie, you won't be here. You're traveling.
Yeah. Oh, bummer.
I know.
Mm-hmm.
Is Jenna on the phone?
Okay. She's sick.
Okay.
Is there anyone else who may not? Okay, you can't go. Would you be able to call in for the business portion of the meeting?
We still have the room, and we can use the phone.
Okay.
So awesome. Okay.
So yes on the phone?
Yes.
Yes.
Anyone else who thinks they might not be able to join that day?
I have to double check,
okay. But
I know I did lock my calendar.
Okay.
But I think I'll probably be able to.
Great. And to Geneva, yeah. And if you can't make it, that's fine. There, you know, Curtis can't and Mike can't. So you can come here if you want to do the business portion of the meeting. If you just come here. Right now we've got that from 1 to 3. So if you can, if you can't, that's fine. We realize a whole day out of the office is hard for people. So that's why we kind of put that option in there. But for everyone else, so David and Jason and Gary.
And for transportation, we have a minivan. Who would be riding in the van? 1, 2, 3.
I could probably drive.
Well, we don't want to.
You don't need to drive.
Drive.
Okay. We have a minivan.
Okay, if you have enough space for me, then I'll.
There are 7 seats in the minivan. Right now, I see 1, 2, 3, 4 people. So
no,
I think there's
okay.
room.
Gonna ride. Okay, cool.
Drive.
I'll probably go to Canada.
We'll strap you on the roof, too.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a shuttle now.
It'll be a little sidecar.
I hope that it's driving. It's working. You have to, like, be here at 6 in the morning.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. With something like that didn't work out. So I may meet up with you guys.
Oh, okay. Just in T-Bird?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So kind of what the plan is we'll get to Geneva. Gemma's going to give us a tour. We'll do lunch with Geneva staff and give them an opportunity to talk about anything that may be of concern to them.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've left a longer time for our meeting. We thought maybe we could talk. If Beth is able to join us, we may talk about kind of the care fund and how we can maybe do fundraising stuff for that. And
well. That was the one thing.
That was kind of the bigger thing, and then, you know, our regular business kind of stuff.
Will you be talking about, don't we have a retreat in the summer that includes
mm-hmm.
our new?
Mm-hmm.
We'll have a retreat in the summer.
We might be talking about that too, we could.
Mm-hmm. All right, we'll talk about ways to.
Planning for that.
Yeah, planning for that.
We may want to talk about filling the rest of our seats that we'll
mm-hmm.
have open. So there's a number of things that we can kind of talk about during the business portion of the meeting. And then once that's over, we'll return back to campus. So it should be a fairly normal day for everyone.
Is it possible more than one Geneva person could be on the EA?
I don't know. See, why not? I mean, they could be an at-large member just like anyone else.
Right.
Yeah, we could do that as a recruitment.
We could.
Mm-hmm.
I'm up there quite a bit. It's a great place. I'd work up there if I could. I just the ambience up there and what they do up there is really cool. One of the things they're struggling with is how to get Geneva the experimentation a higher profile in the community, because Geneva itself now is bearing down on Cornell. to sort of like contribute to Geneva, which is hurting fiscally. So I think that there's probably a lot of people there that do things in the community, but people just don't know about it. I don't know how you frame it in a discussion, but I think they feel a little beleaguered about it.
Yeah, I think, you know, trying to get someone else. I know Gemma says that nobody else is, she's kind of thrown out there for people to be interested in them.
Yeah.
So, but we can plug it again, and hopefully we'll have some good conversation with them. But if anybody has anything else that they would like us to cover over in Geneva, we'll probably have time to cover. The next thing that we have coming up is our meeting after that. We're meeting with Cousin Scorton and Mary. So do we want to take a few minutes to kind of brainstorm some ideas about what we may want to talk with them about?
Can I just ask one more Geneva question?
Yeah.
Is Gemma going to drive you guys around the fields and stuff? Because it would be, it's you know, you guys have been to Geneva Experiment Station, like North Street, you know, the Geneva. It's nice that you're in a building, but the real Geneva story is the
acreage. She's giving us a tour.
It's the acreage.
Yeah.
And the,
yeah.
And the different experiment plots. So.
And she talked about going to the seed, the person who does the seed sorting. And
Kyle
stuff.
Arbin, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that sort of stuff.
I'm just saying, if you could spend some time outside, it would be time well spent because it's,
yeah.
It's beautiful.
Well, that's why we put I think 2 hours to do that. So hopefully we'll get some good. But I'll ask her if we can drive on the
field. We put in a request for good weather.
Okay.
No word back yet.
It's pending.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So, thoughts for our meeting with Mary and President Scorton?
One of the things I would like to ask or bring up is just how to get buy-in from the deans about the staff engagement survey that hopefully we put about in the fall. Or just what suggestions he has.
Or any feedback on what the Institute Director has talked about it at all?
The last that we heard from Mary is that they were going to be working on it and expect to launch it in the fall. But they, you know, in order to do that, they really need to be focused on it. So we could ask, but Mary might have a better sense of that.
And then with the staff engagement, mm-hmm. are we going to have any oversight over the types of questions that they ask?
Basically, what Mary told us from institutional research is that if we want any hope and prayer of this happening in the fall, that we have to kind of let them move it forward very quickly. And if they start to try and have all these inputs from groups, it's going to bog it down and it's going to be a long time. So I think they want to get, what Mary's saying is that they want to get this kind of initial survey out, get some feedback, and use that as kind of basis for future questions and things like that. But that.
But you know, because the only reason I ask this is I'm taking a teacher class mm-hmm. right now, and we look at that. And sometimes we're looking at previous questions, mm-hmm. and how if they don't address anything, or they don't get at to the root questions that we're looking at as staff are concerned. Mm-hmm. And I just want to make sure that we're putting out a survey that at least will bring up. And I mean, I guess not so much asking the questions, but see what the questions are. And if we have a problem with it, I mean, still going to go out of the PA survey. And if we don't have any oversight about the types of questions, I'm a little concerned by that.
I think that's a good point, Curtis. Mm-hmm. Like, are they going to do focus groups? So that, I mean, how are they going to determine?
Well, no.
No, it's not.
Okay,
I don't get that.
And it's not
a
PA survey.
It's
not our EA college. It's the university survey.
Yeah. The piece, I think, building on what Curtis said is because I've done so many organizational surveys, is when you send out a survey, you create a level of expectation with employees. So. I trust that they're very good survey developers there. I think the piece that I would want to know is that whatever those questions are, whatever expectations being created by asking those questions, that we have a way as a university to be able to respond. Mm-hmm. Because otherwise, people take a survey and then they feel like nothing happened and they put themselves out to be honest on it and you pretty much lose people and it makes them even less motivated. if they don't feel like action's been taken as a result of the survey. So I think that's the piece, is we want to know that whatever the questions are asking good questions on things that action will be able to be taken on. And that's the piece. That's the only concern I have with no one else having a chance to glance at the survey before it goes out. I completely understand where they're coming from, that those focus groups and, you know, 800 different groups putting in questions, it will never get out.
Yeah.
So they've got a real good point on that. But I just, you know, hope that before the final version we can glance at it, so if there's any red flags that are going up or, you know, one or two that are blatantly missing, we would have that input.
And I think we can certainly ask that question of Mary. Whether we'll get that, I don't know. But
I mean, I think it's a good...
No, I think it's definitely a good question to ask.
And they've been running the faculty survey, and I've seen that survey, and there's a lot of very good questions on it. So I think that they'll probably look to kind of, I would guess they would look to replicate a lot of those questions.
They are.
They're good. They know what they're doing.
And they're hypersensitive to the issue that you raised about expectations.
About expectations. Oh, good. So you do, you've spoken with them, and they understand that well. Good. I feel.
Other thoughts and things that we'd want to talk about kind of besides the survey?
I have one. I think, you know, Tanya, I think you and I have spoken a little bit about it. And, you know, I'm concerned with how exhausted people are all over campus. I think people are dealing with so much and have been kind of on overdrive. And the thing that, Tanya, I hope you don't mind me bringing up, that you and I had talked about before is this kind of expectation. Sometimes it's because of management expectation, and sometimes it's because of somebody's own individual kind of feeling of just never disconnecting from work. So, you know, after hours, that either the expectation from their department is to check emails two times a night or something like that, or the individual, the term they use in HR is the presenteeism. They're afraid to ever not be present at work, and that can be 24/7. And I really think that that's adding a lot to people's exhaustion. Is there, even on vacations, people are checking in regularly and everything. So I don't know what we can do, what can be done. I was just at a conference last week, and a group of us were talking about HR who are dealing with the same thing at places they went, and we talked about this concept we created called PPT, which is protected personal time. And I just thought it was something that maybe we want to think about tackling in some way, shape, or form, and bringing forward of, you know, what can we do as an organization to try to help people to have that time to kind of rejuvenate and disconnect and feel comfortable doing that.
There's a publication that Gannett does called The Toilet Paper. And they put it in the bathroom stalls and the residence halls. And this month, I just noticed it this morning, this month's tip is that you don't have to be connected all the time.
Mm-hmm.
That there's some benefit to being disconnected for a period of time during the day. So that, you know,
building
students,
that
message is coming out occasionally.
And it's about well-being.
Mm-hmm.
It's about really having us all have better well-being.
And work-life balance.
Yep. So I don't know if there's anything we can do with it, but I do think it's a real problem. And, you know, I know we had talked about it at one point in time, if that's going to be the growing challenge as technology gets better, whether it's a person's own personal expectations or the expectations they're getting from their management around them, it's out there. It's tiring. So, you know, I don't know if there's anything we can do.
Well, it's just a good issue to note and kind of a trend that is growing.
Yeah. And I do think it starts from the top and from a leader's behavior.
Yeah.
I mean, one woman at the conference who managed a huge department said, you know, I write emails at like 1 o'clock and 2 o'clock in the morning, and she said, but what I do is I don't send them until I get to my office at 9 a.m. because I don't want my staff to think they have to respond to me at 2 a.m. And I said, awesome, I love that idea, you know. And that was, you know, some of the things we were talking about in terms of solutions. So anyway.
She still shouldn't be doing writing emails.
I know. Well, she goes, my own problem, I don't want to make anyone else's, is what she said to us. And I said, well, that's good. At least she cares about her staff to do that, so it's not set that expectation.
Other thoughts? Things to talk about?
One of the things I would be curious to know is that I know that almost all the recommendations from the Bain, has been implemented, but have the university been noticing the savings? from your suggestion.
I don't know if he can answer that, but I mean, I'm very curious. I mean, we promoted it so much, like all these things, and I'm like, are we now really saving money?
We could ask him about last year when we talked to him, they announced that $100 million incentive for new faculty. See if that's throwing anybody in.
There was something in the as the magazine that was talking about a couple of people been hired from that program.
If you write this down, I won't be at that meeting, I'm going to be on vacation, but to piggyback on the Bain thing, when Ted Dodds arrived at Cornell, he had some concerns about some of the Bain data, and that in regards to IT, and he is having his own outside external review come in to review some IT, kind of like a peer review from some other universities, that I believe that work is going to be end of June. And so I'm curious to know what the president might be able to add in that, and what the Bain data said, and then what Ted Dodds' view of it was, and you know, what's the new direction, or what are we waiting for the review to see how that changes.
Is anybody going to go hear him speak on Friday?
I was going to try to.
Yeah, I'm going to try to.
That might help, too.
He did the same thing at his last university, I saw.
I think they might be at a place to talk about some of the savings they realized from the budget
standpoint. One of the things I've noticed in these meetings over the years is that there's not enough time for questions. Or somebody asks a question and there's like a 12-minute answer. And I just... it's I don't know how we could address that, but it's not a productive use of this group's time. When it's dominated that much by really, really long answers, which may or may not help us.
Mm-hmm. Well, so could we look at some of this, because there's a couple different things in here, could we look at some of the questions that they may be able to respond to in an email update to not take meeting time?
That would make sense to me.
Well, it seems to me like a lot of the topics we talked about are all tied together. I'll go back to what Linda was saying, mm-hmm. that we're still, and it goes back to the climate survey too, we're still dealing with that feeling of impending doom or doom hanging over our heads, even if we are past the worst of it. Mm-hmm. And so some of it is, you know, is the overwork people feel is because they don't feel like they can afford to let out their trees. And I feel the same way. I mean, you know, it's across the university. It's like, okay, you know, we were told that our workload is going to eventually decrease. But in the meantime, I still feel like I have to put out, you know, 24/7, because if I don't, what's the next bad thing that might happen? So I think there's still a lot of uncertainty here. So I think getting at that with some of the other things, like what sort of progress have we made in terms of the savings? Where is the university positioned now? You know, what are we dealing with going forward? And they all sort of answer to that anxiety that still is there.
What's our hope? What's mm-hmm. our greatest hope? What do we have to look forward to?
And then we can sit and wait for a 9-minute answer. I mean, I think we need real nuts and bolts, pragmatic questions that aren't theoretical, but have tough, data-driven answers to them. Because David and Mary are both wonderful speakers, and David is like, you know, and he's very sincere.
Mm-hmm.
But to your question, you know, you could do it too.
Yeah.
Linda, let me just start by saying that I appreciate the time of the employee assembly, my friends. You know, you guys know the drill.
He talks forever.
But I think, like, Jason's question is just getting more to the point of a matter. Like, let's talk about,
right,
you know, this and this,
yeah,
and how they compare, how they're going to move forward. Are they waiting for this review, or, you know, not... Mm-hmm. Something more theoretical. That's like, well, how are we doing at the university? You know, since I get that question all the time, you know, what are you going to say?
So we could say, in 10 seconds or less, what do you think your top five hopes are for the university?
Right. I'll give a little signal.
We've been bringing a timer.
Well, that is the other thing that whether they go for it, but, you know, which we're thinking of game shows.
It's the general knowledge show.
Just that there is one. I don't know.
The amount?
The dollar amount.
Like an app. It is going around, I understand.
Yeah, I've heard a rumor, but
talk about that.
Usually a percentage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But you know, I'm really worried about these, and with the price of gas going up and everything, I'm really worried about these employees who already have to live 40 minutes outside of town because they can't afford to live in Ithaca, and now they have to drive, and I don't, you know, school taxes are going up, and I don't know, I just don't see how people's plights are good, and they're overworked, and they're not. Everything's just getting worse, I think. So, I mean, I don't. There's not really a question there, but
well,
I'm just trying to think how we can help people, whether it's a transportation issue or a, you know.
No, I mean, there is a question within that to say, you know, what is the university doing, or what strategies are they looking at to help combat staff who work from further away, you know, could, like I know Linda said, there's an email that's going to be coming out soon talking about trying to be flexible with staff.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, is there more of a conversation about being more flexible and allowing people ride share even if it alters their hours or things like that?
You know, I mean, I think it's all great and good, but is it really, you know, really trickling down? I really don't. I think people are afraid to ask for flex time. I think, you know, and I'm thinking for myself. I got laid off. I started a new job. I had to quit my ride share because I was afraid to ask to alter my hours. You know,
mm-hmm.
and I'm in a manager level, mm-hmm. So you can't, you know, you can't tell me that things aren't
right.
Worse as it trickles down. So,
well, would it help to focus things? And I think the specific theory in terms of. What can the EA do? What does Mary and the president see as specific things that the EA can do to move forward on some of this?
Right.
Or will they just push that back on us and say, well, you figure it out?
Well, because I do think the quest time is really important. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I think that's a really important point. So, right, I think we could add it that way.
It seems like our opportunity to engage with them, though, is to ask them what they're doing. You know, we're the purpose in one respect of this committee is to be an active voice for staff. So we're asking the questions and then sharing the responses. So the question is, how are we doing post Bain? You know, what budget savings have we seen? I think that's a really good question to ask. To not to be argumentative or confrontational, but to push issues that we know are important to staff. And for us to go to them and say, well, what should we do, seems like we don't know what we're talking about, kind of thing. Where I know that we've sat through meetings with folks who've come to visit us, where some of us have walked out feeling like there were things that we wanted to say but we didn't say. So
even you?
I do it frequently.
Really?
I know, it's hard to believe. So, you know, what are some of those things?
I think SIP is actually a very good one.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I heard it's 3%, but I have friends who work at other institutions, and their SIP seem higher than that. And, I mean, like, are we being competitive with our staff? I mean, I think that's a very, like, you know, when you're deciding on SIP, is it really competitive? I mean, I'm curious to know.
So I think what I'll do, because I want to get to some other stuff, and we've got a pretty big list here, try to convince them down some questions and shoot them out to everyone and see if there are some things that we can ask them to provide answers to on the front end that we might not necessarily want to take up meeting time, and then find, you know, one or two salient points that we can really spend our time discussing.
I think the key with the first thing is to get to them, somehow get to the managers,
mm-hmm.
whether it's the EA meets with them and says we really support this and we want, you know, how are we going to help people understand this?
Mm-hmm.
That's important. You know, because it's all fine for Mary and David to say, let's do it, and it's fine for us to say, let's do it, but without the managers on board, you know, it's not going to happen.
All right, if anybody has any other thoughts, shoot an email or anything?
I'll text that one more. And this maybe might be more. Does she expect any increases in our health care for the next year?
In cost?
Yes.
There was this year.
I mean, I thought it went up. I mean,
yeah, I don't know. I would imagine that that won't be decided until the board meets and sets the next budget.
Well, I mean, that's when they approve it, but it's, mm-hmm. are they expecting an increase?
You can ask us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it's based on utilization. Mm-hmm. It's based on utilization since we're self-funded mm-hmm. programs.
But I'm sure they got some data now.
Mm-hmm. Maybe.
January's not that far away.
Yeah. I actually think Gordon should hear about the snarky faculty, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. That'd be a good thing for him to hear in person.
Oh, yeah.
I suspect he knows about the
faculty. I
must
have been about that last year. All I know staff members that have doctors also, and yet we're still treated as second-class citizens. And he was like, why are you saying that? Do you remember that?
I do.
Kind of, you have to keep the message forward, moving.
That's right. That's right.
And he tried to tell me that this $100 million for faculty was going to trickle down to staff. Yeah. I don't see that happening.
Well, you know, kind of. I mean, if you bring in a new faculty member, they, depending on their work, they may require staff.
It doesn't help. It doesn't help those who are here right now.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Right. But I think
nothing.
No, I think it's the grant that they're thinking is the money mm-hmm. that the staff will eventually see in the research labs and the grants. Mm-hmm. And I know one of the things I thought was interesting is if you haven't seen the Ezra article that came out, one of the things that was interesting in it is that I had thought that a lot of that money was going to be used to bring in kind of entry level staff, but really that money is being used to bring in some very heavy hitters, some very big names who already have established research programs. So I thought that was kind of interesting. People who will be able to get grants like this. Mm-hmm. So that was interesting. If you have a chance, you might need it. We got to go into Ezra maybe this quarter.
So moving on, Leslie and Beth and I met with Mary last week. We talked about the transportation. Proposed transportation resolution, and Mary encouraged us to kind of hold off on putting something forth because there are other issues beyond motorcycles that she thinks will be important staff, and we haven't seen those items yet, so they've been in senior leadership. I spoke to Jeff Lally today, today, and there are a bunch of different things on the table that are with senior leadership. Nothing's been approved yet. He's happy to come and talk with us about that. Unfortunately, our next meeting is up in Geneva, and then the meeting after that is with President Scorton and Mary, and we're done for the year. So
I interrupt you for a second. He's going to come to a UA meeting next Wednesday at 4:30.
Yep.
So if anybody's really interested in there, he's going to present.
Well, the other thing that he's going to do is he's agreed to come and meet at the next executive committee meeting. So we're looking at rescheduling that because there's a conflict right now. But when we know when that will be, he'll come and meet with us, and if anybody else wants to join us. But we'll at least get what the full proposal is. But my understanding is that there's parking rate increases and changes in parking structure. In a variety of things. So, some lot changes that resulted in increases, but this would be more of across the board increases kind of thing.
So, what is this? This sounds odd to me. So, like, there's all these changes that we don't know about on the table, so they want us to hold off about the motor.
Because there could be other issues that we would also want to opine on.
So are we going to get to chime in on these issues after they've been approved?
No, they've not been approved yet.
And they're actually going to share this information with us before they approve it?
Yes, and Joe wants to go to the UA before he comes to the EA, because the UA is the overarching over everyone.
But on our calendar, there's no way for us to address it because we're done.
Well, we could address it. There's nothing saying that we can't have another meeting and that we can't, I mean.
Or we can do it via email.
Right. I mean, there's a variety of things. I'm just saying for him to be able to come and talk with us at a meeting won't work out.
So this goes back to my other question. So there's already a resolution on the floor to be voted on. why can't we just go ahead with that one? And then if there's more issues that come up, do another resolution.
Because do we want to piece and parcel on the same issue? Or would we be stronger talking about all of the transportation issues?
In one resolution?
Mm-hmm. Or we may not want
Well, here's,
we may not be against all those changes.
I mean, if there's a
right, but if there's okay, so say for example, right now we're talking about a motorcycle increase that maybe, you know, an annual fee versus a one time, but then also on the table is a 15% hike increase for all parking on campus.
Right.
To me, that's the bigger battle because that affects a whole lot more people. And go ahead.
I was going to say, I know that either Joe or David Lee presented on this transportation advisory committee. February, because of course of this discussion, I went back and looked in their minutes, and there are a bunch of bullet points about the aspects that discussed. I don't know how much detail was available at that time, but I can just try to circulate the link to that.
Yeah, that would be great.
I think the point.
The feeling that this is it shouldn't be a complete blindside because they have been talking about this plan with tech for a while.
The point is that we're not sufficiently informed yet to make an opinion about the proposal. We know the piece that you brought to us, but we don't know the scope of the whole proposal. And it sounds like it's pretty drastic. Right, and we can't even say, you know, for example, with the motorcycle piece, does that affect 50 people, 100 people, versus parking, which may affect 5,000 people? So do we want to, you know, throw out this strong thing on motorcycle and then when it comes to the parking, you know, not have that tied in and have them all kind of piecemeal here and there?
I hear you. It just seems like, okay, there's two issues. One, I have concern that there's already a motion on the table to be voted on, but it's kind of off the minutes because of merit. And I don't know if that's the case, but I kind of find that kind of a problematic. Like, we're going to remove a motion that's already been placed in front of the EA because they're saying hold off. And then my second concern or question is, when we were talking about resolutions, and I was like, about the staff engagement, mm-hmm. my suggestion was like, just send an email, let's just first, and we were like, no, we have the power to do resolutions, mm-hmm. let's do resolutions, and however he feels, and that's however he feels, we can go back and create more resolutions. So I'm now hearing like a kind of a backtracking on what the importance of resolutions is. Because all our resolution states are, if this is something we want the president to look at, and if we want to send, like, when we're talking about the student ones, like, if they want to send three of them, they'll send three of them, and they do more than. So are we saying now that our resolutions are different than all the other EAs? Or
no, I think the last one, the staff engagement thing, is that we were writing to President Scorton to ask. What we were talking about doing is asking his opinion on if he thought a survey was a good idea before we offered up a resolution. This time, we're saying, you know, I think the motorcycle thing is important, and we can still, I mean, the EA can still vote on that. We can vote on that today and move it forward. I did write to President Scorton last week and let him know that we had some concerns, specifically about the motorcycle piece, and that we were asking him to hold off on any... hope that he can hold off on any decision until we've had a chance to vet it. We're not getting an opportunity to vet the whole package, just this one piece. But we can move forward with one piece. I mean, we could take a vote right now to see if we want to move forward with the resolution as it stands, or we want to wait to look at the whole package. I mean,
did he reply to you?
He did not.
I think that makes
Charlie
uninformed if we don't. If we're not taking in. Depends how are they gonna. They're proving this all at one time, all these points?
All of these points are in one plan that has been going back and forth with senior leadership.
Because I would look at it and be like, well, that's the only part of that plan
that they care about. Right. And when I forwarded that email to President Scorton, Charlie Walcott also quickly wrote back and said, there's much more to this than the motorcycle thing, and you should know all of the details. So I just... you know, hearing that from two other people and knowing that there could be things that are of much greater concern beyond the motorcycle piece,
I think from what I'm talking to you today and going to those meetings, the TAC meetings, that there's stuff that they didn't mention in those meetings. Definitely, like 15% rate increase. They talked all about condensing permits and making it easier and simplifying. There was no mention of major rate increases.
Right,
that
would have
been a red flag for me.
Right.
The whole ALOC thing, I mean, I was specifically there looking for red flags. The only one that really caught my attention was the motor signal. So apparently they're withholding information.
And,
right.
And I don't think they're withholding information. I think a lot of this, before it may have come to TAC, has gone to senior leadership. And Joe Lally was very clear that they have been working back and forth with senior leadership on different iterations of what the proposal is. So what the initial proposal is versus what is on the table now may be very different. But we haven't seen that yet. And Joe is saying he wants to share that with the UA first.
So some of us should try to go to that meeting next Wednesday,
Wednesday
at 4:30.
4:30 starts.
Yeah. And where do they meet?
Here.
In this room?
Mm-hmm.
I spend a lot of time.
It's a nice room.
We're a lot of pieces, don't you?
I agree with everything, Curtis, but I just think that, you know, if someone on the EA forwards a resolution, we should act on it. And, you know, as much as I respect Mary, she's not on the EA, and we don't work for her. And stuff I've dealt with over the years, if there's a big package, if there's a shot across the bow early on, that to me doesn't think, wow, these guys are shallow, uninformed. I mean, they're really engaged right here at the outset. They're going to be keeping an eye on this thing for the full span of time. So I just think that the process is important and that I don't want anyone telling us what to do.
I think that, so let's say in the long run we have five issues, right, with this whole proposal. I still think we would want to submit them separately. I mean, you wouldn't want to lump in all of your concerns into one resolution, because then how is the president going to address them all in one? Like, he can't really support one part of it and not another, so
it
kind of seems to me like they should be, really?
Mm-hmm.
They should be separate.
Mm-hmm. I don't accept this. We need to look at this again. It happens all the time.
Well, I'm just saying, like, there's an issue we know of. Like, we know about the motorcycle.
Well, we don't know for sure that that's what ultimately, the way that it was written is ultimately what will be presented next week even.
Yeah.
But that's not what the resolution is for.
Well, the resolution, what we wrote in the resolution was to ask them to not increase the rate to $100 or $108, whatever it is, a month, but to reduce it to $60. But we don't even know, the university hasn't, we don't even know at this point, is it $100 or has senior leadership knocked that out? I don't know that.
Well, in the meantime, I think the existing resolution is great, fine, but you know, there might be a this broader issue of units thinking that they have a done deal that hasn't been discussed with the assemblies, and perhaps some other resolution or a question of President Horton in 2 weeks about this process. And in fact, you know, you might want to send an email to Mary now, I think there's probably going to be a lot of questions about the details of this package.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure you can get a lot of specifics by then. And in order for them to find out the details about it, they're going to have to talk with Joe and Sleeve, and that will get them thinking about the EA as well.
Yeah, talking about employee morale.
Yeah.
You have $4, you know, gas and 15% rate increase in your parking. That's crappy.
Mm-hmm. And Mary was very clear about the fact that she was throwing back at them that this is not acceptable and has continued to send them back to the table to rethink it.
But why would, see, I guess my favorite concern is, why would they, and I don't want to use they because I don't know who they are, sorry.
And you don't want to die.
Yes, but feel comfortable to even engage in that kind of conversation and get that far along without even conversing with the EA or EA.
Well, that's why they asked us to have representation on the committee.
Yeah,
David is on
the panel. Well, yeah, and I mean, and that's where the resolution came from. But I mean, it still seems kind of fishy to me, that kind of And then they're like, hold off, but we're going to still talk to somebody else. When we're under the gun in terms of running out time, it's kind of going back to like Gary's old thing, like, so what are we waiting for? We have an issue now that we know about, whether or not they might be changing in this room, but we have a concern about it. Why can't we just address that concern we have there, which we know about? And then when other concerns, or they choose to engage with us after conversing with whomever, we address those concerns too.
I think it could be that the resolution that we wrote may not be accurate anymore. The bottom
well,
line.
So here's the thing.
The policy has already changed, but what makes me really nervous is that when are we going to see these things? After it's approved?
Yeah.
Well, no, because it's going to the UA on Wednesday to be looked at.
Is that like a final draft, though, on Wednesday?
Probably. Probably a final proposal.
Can we get a copy?
I asked Joe, and he will not give that to me until he shares with the UA.
All right, so we can have it on Thursday.
Yeah. So here's the thing, because in the interest of time, we've got our guest speaker here. Do we want to take an informal vote on if we want to move forward with the resolution as it stands right now?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. All in favor of moving forward with the resolution?
I guess so. David, you think the thing's inaccurate now?
Could be.
So I think if it's potentially inaccurate, then I'm not voting for it.
Well, I mean, it's just a matter of,
well,
we could just say we want to keep it. Can't we just modify it to everyone keep it from $60 and not say what the increase is? Isn't it $60 now?
Why not just forward a copy of the resolution to Joe and say if there's anything that's factually inaccurate, send me corrections by this time? But I mean, it's his program.
Yeah.
He's the one who's going to be responding to this resolution, so you're interacting with him one way or the other.
Yeah. And he and Dave Lee were copied on the email that I sent to President Scorton saying that we have some concerns. So they were copied on it, so they are aware of our concerns.
And I mean, I understand that, you know, this consultation has been lacking in proactivity, but that doesn't, you know, change the fact that anytime something involving a program is involved, just as they should be proactive in involving the EA, we need to be proactive in reaching out to them. And
so the other question is this: we can scrap the resolution as a motorcycle issue, create a new resolution just simply stating that as the employees, representatives of the employees, we understand that there are proposed major transportation changes on the table, and we ask that there be no formal decision made until the EA has an opportunity to see the proposed resolution and respond.
That's
what
we have to wait to.
That's not a resolution.
We can form it as a resolution.
But even if we make that resolution, we still won't have an opportunity to vote on that resolution.
Well, we could vote on it in Geneva. We have to give 1 week's notice. So if we put something together by next Wednesday.
After the UA.
The UA is just meeting to find out about.
Okay.
The UA doesn't vote on it. This is going to be a decision made by President Scorton. So where do we want to go? Does anyone want to vote on the resolution as it stands?
Well, don't we have
to? No,
we don't.
I kind of feel like we should wait till Wednesday and see what happens.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Great. Thank you. So we will go, we're going to skip ahead in our agenda because we've got our guests here. So if you want to look at
This is Jeff Shepardson. He works for the Community Dispute Resolution Center, CDRC. And he and I had a conversation a month or so ago about ways that the CDRC could get more involved with Cornell. And through that conversation, it seemed like talking to the EA made a lot of sense, particularly since a lot of the things that we've talked about over the course of this year have been around civility, respect, disputes, ways that we're not working well with each other, and we need to learn how to do that better. And so it just seemed to make a lot of sense for him to come and talk with us, with no expected outcome other than let's just talk and see what he has to say. So, Jeff, welcome.
Let's talk.
Wait, that's somebody else's motto, isn't it?
Yeah, it should be ours. Actually, it sounds like this conversation you just had kind of sets a nice stage for my little presentation here. Yeah, because oftentimes the devil is in the details, and the communication, and particularly communication around process and procedure, is just so paramount, and we tend to kind of want to short circuit all of that. And what we end up doing is spending twice as much time because we don't take the time we need to have the conversations that we need. And so you're all, I found at least that you're experiencing a little bit of that right now. But we all do. And so the Community Dispute Resolution Center has been around for 25-some years now downtown in the other part of Ithaca. And we've been offering our services primarily in the form of mediation. Do folks here know about CRC? Has anybody had any some interaction with it? Or Gary?
Too much.
Too much. And why is that? Well, that's because nobody likes conflict, right? So, and difficult conversations. And so really that's kind of where our bread and butter is as an agency. So just to kind of give you then a bird's eye view of the agency itself, as I said, we offer mediation services, which is what the agency does. The agency provides those services free of charge at no cost to the participants. Our funds come from the Unified Court System of New York, and the family court system is the system that utilizes our services the most because of the large number of cases involving disputes between folks who are divorcing or separating and have to figure all of those transitional issues out. And so the courts rely on us heavily for that, therefore they fund us heavily. Or I should say, used to fund us heavily. as you may or may not have heard, lots of cuts have been coming down through the pipeline these days in New York, and CERC just took a major hit this past week and had a 70% reduction in our operating funds.
Yeah,
70%. It was pretty traumatic last week. We had probably 8 layoffs out of a staff of 13 or 14. And Gary, I got my job back.
That was good.
But in any case,
just took a call, Jeff. No problem.
Yeah, right. So I appreciate it. So our mediation services are services that we offer to the community, and we do all kinds of mediation. We do workplace mediation. We do landlord-tenant mediations. You know, where there are people, there are conflicts, and therefore these are the services that we can offer in terms of mediation work that we do. And then there's the other piece of the work that we do, which is primarily why I'm here today, though the mediation services may be of interest to you. But the other piece is the education and training components that we offer and have offered throughout the years to the community. And so we'll actually offer mediation skill training to individuals, as well as conflict management workshops, which is kind of something along the lines of the mediation skill work training that we do, but to a lesser extent. And so that information is in this little folder that I had given you. And so really kind of what I wanted to do today was to just float a balloon here and with this group of folks to give you just a sense that we're out there. And knowing, of course, the environment that we are all working in these days, where oftentimes people are being asked to do more with less, and then on top of that, you're here at Cornell, and it's an animal. It's a political animal, obviously. We seen that even here at the table, and it's you know, there's a lot of dynamics that go on in an institution of this size, and so what I'm actually trying to do these days is do a little bit of fishing around the community in terms of where can CDR services be used, where does it make sense for us to kind of be a resource for folks, both in terms of training and education work that we can do, but also in terms of the mediation services, you know, that we might be able to provide to folks, both in the faculty and staff, and but also in the student services end as well, in the student community. So we, you know, the application can be made in a number of different ways, I would suspect. So I just thought maybe I would come, and Leslie offered last month for me to come and visit a little bit and just kind of see maybe what your thoughts are about that, if you have any kind of, or if you have questions, first of all, and then if you may have any ideas about where something like this might be useful.
So how do you connect with our HR in terms of, like, say somebody wanted to use you, and does it need the blessing of Cornell Human Resources? And then what about interacting with the training that we offer out at Thornwood and those places, and that we're not duplicating training efforts?
Okay, two things. No, I don't think you'd have to go through Cornell's HR to utilize, although you might want to just let them know that you're utilizing CDRC's mediation services. And what I'm doing currently, I'm having conversations up at Thornwood with organizational development about collaborating our trainings. So if there's actually some trainings that the university would like to kind of undergo in terms of whatever focus they want to take around conflict management skills, that we might be able to collaborate together to do that. So if somebody, say in this room, wanted to investigate a training, I would suspect and would suggest that it kind of actually be a three-way conversation, maybe with organizational development or whomever else might need to know or would be interested in the initiative. And again, it's like, you know, you have to stop and say, all right, who's got some interest in this process, and who should we be keeping in the loop? So, I don't know. Does that answer your question?
Yeah. So if we wanted to pitch an idea for training on the importance of progressive faculty-staff relations, and the training would look like 24 people in a room, 12 staff, 12 faculty, we would pitch that to you and to Thornwood and see if something could come out of there that would be offered as a course or a class?
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly, the initiative could take off on its own, but if Thornwood is actually trying to do something along those lines, it might be something where we could actually, you know, kind of fold that into whatever it is that the broader initiative might be.
Yeah, I don't think they're doing anything like that, do you?
Probably not.
No. I would think that the way that they're engaging you is really from supervisor management training to get skills on how to manage conflict within work groups.
Could be.
Yeah, are you working with Kathy or Chris? Mm-hmm. Kathy? Because I'm thinking, I have the employee, a faculty and staff assistance program, work-life services is part of my portfolio.
Right.
And I'm thinking that offering a course that could be general enrollment across campus to people who are dealing with personal conflict situations as a starting point to give some general tips might be a really nice thing to offer as a general enrollment thing for people who are dealing with personal conflict at home. Then it would be a good referral so that if they did need more one-on-one counseling, they could come to you, if it's whatever. That's where I was seeing. It would be really great for you as kind of a general enrollment thing. And then I love the idea of as we were talking about Gary's concept, you should go into training design. You keep coming up with it. I think it's a fabulous idea of helping to see different perspectives and sides in how that conflict develops. That would be very neat to do. I would wonder where. I mean, we could talk with Kathy about it because she might be willing to take that on as a interesting pilot.
Yeah.
To see how it would go.
Sounds fun, actually. I think it would be interesting.
Well,
Potentially, but hopefully constructive part.
Well, let me. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I was going to a different point if you wanted.
Well, I was just going to say just to kind of put a little cap on that. I think that that's kind of like it would be, you know, kind of a version of mediation. I mean, we'd have to think about how that conversation would happen, but in terms of kind of having two different perspectives in the room, where you would then offer people the opportunity to get together and you know, do whatever you want, would hope they could do. I mean, the facilitation process would be quite similar to what we might do at the mediation table.
No, I was just going to suggest that this might be a good topic for a retreat for all the assemblies, and specifically on using complex situations or complex conversations to build our performance. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That would be a really good retreat thing for our summer.
That's what
I think UA and SA especially can probably benefit from
those types of retreats. Like we would take a course.
Well, I mean, we do our summer retreat, so maybe they could come in and do a couple hour session on how
a little workshop of
workshop.
And so the faculty staff is kind of what you were thinking of, right, Gary? In terms
of and it wouldn't even be, it'd be like, the beauty of these Thornwood trainings is like you're in a room where with people from all over campus. You don't work with any of them. And it's just, some people have like, you know, cross pollination. But first of all, it's beautiful because you get a real sense of like how big the campus is, what people are doing. And then it just, these are like general issues. These aren't like personal things. These are like kind of like corporate issues. And if people would go back in their workplace and said, gee, I just took this thing. This was time well spent. I didn't realize this or that.
I can put something about this in the EA, our newsletter for the employees that we send out to all the staff. So I can put just a small blurb in there about your organization and the services that it offers.
Mention free of charge, because that's
charge,
really huge from
definitely,
what I hear
from
a lot of our employees, especially given what they're talking about.
And despite the fact that we took such a hit last week with our funding, we're still able to maintain the mediation services that we offer. We really rest on the backs of a large pool of mediators. Curtis, you really remind me of I was just thinking of mediators, and there's a fellow that just went through the training that you dead ringer for, and they keep thinking you're him, but you're not. Anyway, and so that might be, I mean, that's important to kind of recognize that even our agency, that's where I was going, our agency rests on the backs of our volunteer mediators.
Yeah.
And so that's...
That would be a good thing to mention here, too, that if you have a program, a training program or something for volunteers...
We do. We're so well flushed in it because we have such a large pool of mediators to draw from.
A program for parents.
We have a special program just for that.
Do you guys ever interact with our ombudsman's office? There's an ombudsman here.
No, I haven't. At this point, I haven't made any overtures, but hope to here soon. I've got the contact information for them because it sounds like...
Linda Foxen, you know?
Yeah.
That's over to me.
But she won't get the job because
she's
got
faculty.
And some of the other conversations that CDRC is having on the Hill here, I say on the Hill, excuse me, here at Cornell. So actually we're working with Mary Beth Grant at the
Judicial Administration.
And we're actually opening up a roundtable discussion with I think it's the dean at ILR, and then Hubble, the
dean of
students. Thanks. I'm sorry. These names are still all, and a couple other people to see just about where this service might work and the students' services arena as well. which kind of ties into your idea a little bit, just in terms of kind of a broad general offering to the community.
We could do one special, to your point, to people who are dealing with their teen children, because that is definitely a unique and challenging time in life.
Well, and I wonder about the, you said you've got plenty of mediators in the city, but creating a cadre of folks here at Cornell who can be volunteers who can provide that service.
I think it would be really great if you could have some kind of a, you know, a like service here in Cornell that could be run kind of peopled by Cornell folks.
But trained by your
Yeah. Where does fear or the inability to take action fall in within the conflict resolution spectrum? So say it's not like really overt conflict, but there's somebody who really wants to have something happen, but they're actually like afraid to forward it.
Conflict aversion. You mean they just don't want to? They don't want to go there.
Yeah.
And I mean it's probably one of the main pieces that prevent people from actually engaging in this way. Because there are a lot of people that do not want to have anything to do with conflict, and they're so afraid of it. But the benefit of maybe with having a neutral third person or a neutral process, it can take them off the hot seat, so to speak. I mean, they're still having to engage in a very conflictual process, but it's a little bit different if you've got somebody that's kind of supporting your conversation and helping you to kind of get some clarity and define appropriate next steps or whatever it is. And, you know, sometimes agreements come and sometimes they don't, but it's just... But how do you get people to not be afraid? Well, you don't, really. I mean, it's just kind of a...
Well, you can see some opportunities where it would be good if somebody was at the table who wasn't affiliated directly with Cornell. You know what I mean?
Definitely.
That is often the magic of having the person from CDRC come. I mean, we oftentimes, like, we'll work with social workers and we'll work with caseworkers who are very able to manage conversations and conflict. But when they're not perceived as being neutral, or when they're so involved in the conversation that's going on, they kind of go into it with one hand tied behind their back.
Yeah.
And it's nice if you can bring a third person in who can facilitate the conversation and, again, take them off the hot seat so they can actually participate in the conversation and not have to worry about facilitating it and being neutral and all of that. It's actually it's a nice benefit for folks, professionals especially. So I want to follow up on your idea. Maybe we can do that after the meeting or something. And the other, I mean, I don't know in terms of how we would move forward with any kind of, I mean, if you want to move forward in terms of exploring some of these ideas, I'm certainly happy to do so.
Well, we're having an extended meeting in 2 weeks in Geneva where we'll be able to flesh out some of these ideas and then get back in touch with you to then have more conversation about it.
Great. Are there folks that will be there that aren't here today?
There are.
Okay, so I'll just leave.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Yeah. Thanks for your time.
Appreciate it. Yeah. You're welcome. Okay. All right, so we've got a few more minutes to jump back in now. We can't approve our meeting minutes. But I have, you know, I'm going to give you my notes.
I can't wait to
what is the name? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Oh. Yeah. Envelope. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So we'll have the table approving our meeting minutes until next meeting, which I'm sure is okay. Curtis, do you have anything on election stuff? Or
Please vote. Election is
Did you see a picture of David in the lady?
I did.
Yeah.
Did you see that?
Come on, what are these pictures for?
Do you have one of the copies?
It's nice.
It's a nice picture.
It's like you and, like, you know, 25 women, basically.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
No, on the...
That's from the 80s picture?
That one night?
Remember that one night?
You remember the Vegas trip? The Vegas
trip. Oh, no. Wait a minute.
No, it was on the candidate.
You were wearing a suit.
It was on the candidate when you were the only guy.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I was. I'm kind of. I'll be here for you guys.
Thank you.
Gender equity.
All right. So nothing else on the elections committee, though. Just a sidebar. Amy forwarded to me. There's a gentleman, Alan Ward. The guy who said he wanted to get involved.
Can't remember his
name. Alan Ward or something. Anyway, in Alumni Affairs Development, who asked how he can get involved in campus governance. So there may be another person who would consider taking a seat. So they.
On that note, we wanted to put something in the paw print right after election saying we still have seats open.
Mm-hmm.
But what's the process? I wanted to make sure.
We should probably maybe wait because it would be the new re-elected EA who would vote in. New members,
yeah.
So we don't have to wait until the fall. We can wait till June.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So I'm just thinking we may not want to put it in the next paw print.
Mm-hmm.
We may want to wait till like June. Is there one? When's the last one for the year come out?
The last one will be June 9th, I think. Mm-hmm. You don't want even just the results of the election.
Oh, yeah, the results and all that, but I just mean like a push for other people to consider coming.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, because what happens, are they just appointed?
Yeah, then the new EA basically will come in, like what happened.
Yeah.
Yeah, that, you know, we just say, oh, here are people who are interested in taking a seat on the EA, and we basically say yes or no.
So are we
going to
announce the Kindle winner at that point, too,
for
next week?
We should. We'll be able to.
Will we have time? Let's see. Elections are over when?
Friday.
And when's your deadline?
Monday would be good.
All right, yeah. We could, right? Yeah. How do we determine that? Our answer.
Did you win?
I voted.
We can have, I can see if Ari can have a computer, like, pick a random ID number.
Yeah.
See, now I voted and it told me I didn't vote again.
Yeah,
I got the
No, there was a bug in the system.
Okay.
That got the reminder.
Right,
you only voted.
I only voted once, so I didn't stop.
But your vote counted when you voted. So.
Yeah, so we could have.
People get
Kindle winner that very
kidding. If I had a piece of paper, I'm going to vote just so I can get the Kindle.
That was
good.
All I did.
Good.
Right? Unless they did it, like, close their eyes and pick, which is kind of not good. But.
Well, we're only eight candidates anyway. Linda, do you have anything on the faculty deficit program other than?
Yeah. Well, first of all, thank you for everybody who submitted your.
And I have one still.
Okay. People who missed the meeting didn't
get it. I did you not get it? I sent it to you yesterday. I sent it to you as a scan effect.
No. No, you don't want my email. Get it.
Yeah, there were two that came out. Two of the concepts that came out the highest of all of them. So I did send it on to the communications team, and they're going to kind of develop them too. But if you do have more to build, submit them, that would be great. And
yeah,
then
it's very good. Can you get applications, right?
Yeah. So, you know, more to come. We're moving forward with hiring the new staff for the function. So we'll be going into the second round of interviews in the next couple of weeks. And keep you guys posted.
Good.
Lots of communication.
Yeah, we met. We're still following through on the communications plan, getting the words out about voting. And we did talk about wanting to still go forward with some sort of small survey specifically about the employee assembly and knowledge about the assembly and why people don't want to join the assembly. So we're going to still be working on that, and we'll be asking for input and involvement from the board for the assembly. And let's see, we got that. I'm putting together a binder so that the next person from the committee will have something to go on, something all stuff in there. And I will be working on the next EAE news, so if anybody has things they would like to add into that, send them to me. I'm traveling, so I probably won't get it out for the second week of May, so they send me everything, but anything you have by the first week of May. I will get a draft out to everybody.
I have a quick idea.
Yes, sir.
So I work with a professor, Catherine McComas, over in communications, and her classes are always looking for stuff to do. And I wonder if a good class project might be enhancing the profile of the EA, forwarding the mission of the EA, having a class devise a communications plan that we could look at.
That'd be cool.
Embrace, reject.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know.
Maybe they could do our survey for us.
And that we could actually get them, you know, we're out of time, obviously, as far as a year goes, but sometime to visit with us and get some input about what we want, and then they could hit the ground running in September.
Was it a spring or a fall class?
It'd be a fall class. I'd be pitching a fall class.
You'd be pitching it to her for the fall.
Yep. Can I proceed with
pitch
that?
Pitch away.
Thank you.
David, did you have anything for Transportation Advisory Committee?
We were supposed to have a meeting yesterday, but it was canceled because a lot of people couldn't make it. And I think they're going to hold up until after next week's UA meeting. That's going to be it. And I believe there's going to be actual representatives from TCAT there. So if you have any issues with the bus schedules, the crowded buses, the lack of buses, let me know before then.
Excellent. Any open forum? All right. 2 minutes to spare.
I think there's a little mob outside. It sounds like it, doesn't it?
Well, we still have 2 minutes. You weren't
time.
Here last time.
Oh, okay.
But do you
this is Melissa.
Hi.
This is Melissa. I work in the Department of Horticulture and
They're opening as we speak.
We're
going to wrap them
warm in here.
You can buy over
What did you say?
And then you snore. So we
stop, the tape is still on, Jerry.
I think he was there.
One night.
Okay, I don't even want to know.
You can't unthink that, can you?
No.
All right.
Jeff, thanks for coming.
Does anybody want to make a motion to adjourn?
Yes.
Come over.
All right.
We can't formally adjourn enough people.
If you want to.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.